When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The number one podcast. Hello and welcome to the number one podcast, the football podcast, where we look after the number ones. I am Lloyd Griffith. This is David Preece.
Hello, Matt.
How are you?
I'm very well. I only ever hear this voice that you use on the podcast. I don't hear it any other time when I speak to you. It's just that one. It's your special.
You know what? I thought that. But that speaking me, hello, welcome. I've also got like got a weird like kind of podcasty voice, intro voice.
I think you could do like the trailers for films.
Yeah,
yeah. You'd be that guy.
He was fat. He was from Grimsby. He became a goalkeeper. Fat Grimsby. Yeah, I think about that. Today we have a guest. He is the man behind the stats. You tell your pals down the pub. He's head of UK content at Opta. Is that still your job title?
One of them, yeah. There's a few.
Okay.
Just man from Opta.
It's man from Opta. It's Duncan Alexander.
Hello.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
First and foremost, you need to follow Duncan on Twitter. He's got a weird handle, Oily Sailor.
Mm.
What's behind that?
It was a random name I chose for a Wickham Wanderers message board in the late 90s. And it became a world-renowned brand, so I can't ditch it now. Yeah.
So you've got many jobs at Opta. Opta, for those that don't know, do you want to... I'm sure most people that listen to us know what Opta is and probably follow Opta.
Yeah, they've probably heard the name. But, yeah. I mean, we essentially analyse sport, mainly football,
yeah,
obviously, because football's the best sport. And we, we work with clubs, we work with the media, we work with anyone that wants data, really. And obviously the things with data is you can kind of slice it up however you want, so different people want different things.
And so you work with Premier League clubs,
mm-hmm,
Football League clubs?
Yeah, we work probably 150 clubs around the world.
So, really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, now stats have become such an integral part of football. It's the kind of thing that you want to, you know, we start our podcast and the main podcast with a little stat at the beginning. It kind of, it's become part of the game.
Yeah, people used to be scared of stats though, especially managers, I think, because it used to, there was a fear of them because it showed the truth.
Mm.
There was nowhere of, any kind of waffling after in post-match interviews. You know, you can't hide black and white stats, like, you know. I don't know, a manager used to say stats are like miniskirts. They reveal a lot, but they don't show you exactly what you want to see. I'm sure it was something like that. Ebb Scovedal. I'm sure it was that. It's something like that. And
so 80s.
Yeah, but it was because there was a fear of them because it showed up the exactly how you played, rather than just the end result.
I think they can be used badly, and what we strive to do through our social media and other avenues is try and use them in a good way, which hopefully shows people the right way to use them, because you can, you know, you can take something out of context and you know, inverted commas, prove something that isn't necessarily true.
There was once somebody was talking about the other week about Kevin De Bruyne has given the ball away the most times in the Premier League.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, Alexis Sanchez gets that a lot, loses possession a lot, but he plays in a position where you're going to lose possession a lot. So what does that mean? It doesn't really mean anything.
Follow Opta Joe if you don't already, and that was your brainchild, is that right?
Yeah, me and a couple of other guys saw Twitter emerge in the late 2000s, and we were already kind of doing, you know, short bits of fact-based content. And I said, you know, this is a good idea. You know, we could put our stuff there, and a few commercial people were like, no, that's a bad idea because you're giving stuff away for free. But it was actually, what it did was kind of get the message out there. And also you can, as people know who are on Twitter, people aren't slow in telling you when they don't like something. So it's quite a good way of finessing your content.
you've got quite a fair few followers already. You're on 28,400. And we'd like to say to our followers, all 1,800 of them, go and follow you, because it's one of my favourite Twitter accounts.
It's
absolutely brilliant. And you've also, because of that, not because of that, but you've got a book out. Now, we are obviously the podcast that talks about everything that goes on inside the box, and your book is called Outside the Box.
It is.
Could you give us a brief description as to what your book is about, and if anyone's thinking about a book for the summer?
Yeah, it's waterproof.
It's like Australian money.
Yeah,
it's waterproof.
It's not waterproof. It's unless you got it's on a Kindle, maybe, I don't know. But you know, read it by the pool or other water-based fun. It came out last autumn, but so it kind of looked back at the 25 years of the Premier League.
Yeah,
that's the sort of main structure. So I go through each season, but there's other chapters as well. There's the history of the World Cup, and I kind of ponder why World Cups aren't as exciting as they used to be, which may be a fact from being English and of a certain age as well, because obviously everyone thinks fondly of the first World Cups they can remember compared to maybe, you know, being rubbish in Brazil. And there's other things as well. There's, you know, there's lots in there.
So. I just picked out a few of your... There's so many good tweets that you've done. And we tried to work on a few things together.
We've
been pals for a little while. I did a video for EA Sports a few years back where I went and met the likes of Ryan Giggs, Gary Neville, Carlos Resach, Lionel Messi and Duncan Alexander. Do you know what I mean? It was an absolute smorgasbord of...
The big five,
yeah. The class of 2015. But I've just picked out a few of your tweets that are goalkeeping related. You said, Jordan Pickford, the first goalkeeper to record a shot in the Premier League this season. You tweeted that in February of this year. And then you followed that up with, 1% of Everton's shots under Allardyce have come from their goalkeeper. He's level with Morgan Schneiderlin. just small things like that make me very, very, very happy. There was another one as well, but I can't remember where it was. Here we go. You said that West Bromwich Albion versus Palace, a match where one goalkeeper is a former chef while the other is a former restaurant owner. Is that true?
It is, but Ben Foster is a big fan of cooking and has apparently got a barbecue shed in his garden.
Really?
Which is good. And Julian Speroni, sadly now it's closed down. I went past it the other day and it's shut up. But Speroni's on the by the roundabout in Purley.
So I asked you to bring along some stats. We chatted on the previous podcast that with regards to goalkeeping... The Golden Glove is seen as... It's basically the one award every year that, you know, is talked about. It's the Clean Sheet Award. Whereas now that... I wouldn't say it's outdated, but because of the likes of Opta, there's so much more data that you can kind of take from goalkeeping performances. Do you look at clean sheets anymore? I'm obviously, you know, but actual goalkeeping clean sheets, is that a thing for you, or is it
not? I mean, we do, but I guess it's more of a representation of the team as a whole. So obviously, like someone at a black Atletico has got a lot of clean sheets, but that really is a byproduct of that whole team being extremely good defensively. I mean, I think if they've kept 32 clean sheets this season, and if you're very good defensively, obviously the keeper's going to come out pretty well. But you can get players who aren't necessarily keeping clean sheets who are actually playing quite well. The kind of, you know, the put upon goalkeeper. Someone like Fabianski this season at Swansea, who, you know, his team are pretty much going down now, but he's probably been one of their few good performers.
There's probably, I mean, you probably say the same for strikes as well. You know, a striker is only as good as supply, really.
It goes
for strikes as well.
So what have you brought for us in the way of stats that we can well
So, I mean, people might be aware, last year we pushed out something called expected goals to the wider world. I mean, it dates back. We've been working with clubs using that for a few years now. And you know, we pushed it out to the media last year. Essentially, we've got, you know, thousands and thousands of shots in our database, where they start, where they finish, and for goalkeepers, where they actually are in the goal as well.
Right.
So you can basically look at an average. So you know, there might be 1,000 shots from one place on the pitch in the penalty box, say, and, you know, 30% of those end in goals. So the kind of it's almost like golf. It's like a par for that position,
right,
and,
okay,
and that kind of game state. So it might be, if it's from a corner, you know, there'll be more people in the box and stuff like that. So, you know, if there's a par of 30%, you might see a player like Messi or someone who's particularly above that. Or you might see a player who's like Benteke for Palace this season, who basically missed a lot of really good chances.
Right.
So you could give the average player Benteke's chances in the Premier League this season, and he'd have probably scored, you know, 7, 8, 9 goals, whereas Benteke obviously only got a couple. And what you can do for goalkeepers, and in some senses this has worked probably better looking at it from the goalkeeper's point of view than it has from the strikers in some respects, you can actually look at, you know, where what the average keeper would have saved, looking at where the shots are, compared to actual real life goalkeepers. And what emerges from the Premier League this season is that David De Gea and Nick Pope are by far the two most effective goalkeepers in the Premier League. So if we look at like goals prevented based on this kind of algorithm, De Gea, he's conceded 26, but looking at the shots he's faced, shots on target he's faced, you'd have expected him to let in 40. So that's, you know, pretty
14.
Much 14 additional goals he's prevented. So if you think where United would be if they'd have, you know, it's funny that United have the air of a team who've struggled a little bit, yet they're still second, they're still in the cup final. But if, you know, they had an average keeper there, they probably would have been, as they have the last few years, struggling to make the top four. And Pope, similarly, he saved probably an additional 10, you know.
Really?
I mean, you'd probably be more accurate with that, so how many points they saved, if you go back and look at those, like I said, those situations where those 14 saves were made. Can you pinpoint them to the exact saves, or is it?
Yeah, you can. I mean, obviously, generally what will happen is a keeper will pick up, you know, a fraction per game. The thing with De Gea this season, people can probably remember, he had that particularly ridiculous performance against Arsenal at the Emirates in December, where I think he probably three or four of those goals come from that single match.
I mean, that double save he makes, so that would probably amount to more than one goal.
Yeah.
So yeah, so if most chances, like, I don't know, 0.7 or something like that, then it works out as okay.
And it's interesting, actually, he's been around 13, 14 for the last few months of the season, so it's almost like his peak form was kind of the autumn, winter, and he's been, you know, whether that's down to United's defence being a bit better, him being a bit more protected, or him just kind of, you know, regressing to more of an average.
What about Nick Pope? How close was he?
So he's on 10, which is, you know, the next highest after that is Fabianski with 6. So, Pope's had a brilliant season. And, you know, based on these numbers, probably should be England's keeper for the World Cup.
Well, we've been talking about that a lot, you know, just because it is obviously World Cup year. We always have this little, well, not always, I often forget to do it, we're on the plane. And, you know, we've just been looking at clean sheets, but also saves made. And this is just like, I'm sure you've got more in-depth analysis, but If you look at, you know, Jack Butland has made the most saves of any goalkeeper this season in the Premier League, and then Nick Pope is sixth with 111, but you kind of expect Pope's done more, I think. I mean, and with stats like this.
Yeah, I mean, Pope's obviously playing for a team who've massively surpassed expectation, whereas Butland is now relegated. Butland's made a couple of high-profile errors as well. So, I mean, it's pretty unlikely that Pope, he might make the squad. It's very unlikely he's going to make the team. You know.
I'm just going to go back to the point made about the goals that they save. It's probably more of a, more accurate if, you know, what they call it, Brian Clough, he would always say that Peter Shilton, who's buying a keeper who's worth 10 points. It's probably more accurate to say that if you're buying a top keeper at that level, at the very top, that you're buying somebody who's saving you 10 goals in that case, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's probably, and then from then you can work out, you know, how many points have saved, but it's probably more accurate to say that than goals.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Actually, if you look at the spread, I mean, most keepers in the Premier League are roughly around plus or minus one goal from what you'd expect. So most are doing about what you'd expect from the chances they faced. The outliers are, you know, De Gea and Pope at one end, and then at the bottom, Ben Foster is bottom with he's actually letting 7 more goals than you'd expect, and Kasper Schmeichel with 6 more.
But is that, and that's an individual stat, as in
That's just based on the shots they faced, right, and where historically, you know, goals have come from based on that type of chance.
Is there anything goes into it from a technical aspect where, you know, you look at the goals and rather than just from where it's taken in the keeper's position, you know, whether it's whether if it's something the keeper should have done, if you look at it and just say they should have saved. I'm talking rubbish here.
I think basically it's quite a clinical approach,
yeah,
which is what data is.
Yeah, I mean, this is essentially, I mean, I've spoken to people who said, well, I don't need a model like this because I can judge it with my eyes, which is a perfectly valid point of view if you're like an ex-pro or something. But the point is that unless you want to sit through thousands and thousands of games, the point of a model like this is that it can allow you to, you know, narrow down a search if you're recruiting players or something, because, yeah.
Do England use this? Do they look at these stats? The England national team? Will what I'm trying to say is, will Gareth Southgate be looking at that?
I think every football team, be it a club team or international team, will now have, you know, analysts who will, you know, they might necessarily be using this particular model, but they will have their own kind of version of it.
Who, as you, as Duncan Alexander, football fan and England fan,
yeah,
who are you taking to the World Cup in goal?
I think I would take Pickford, obviously. I think he's probably
there. Why obviously? And is that with a football or with your opta badge on as well?
The way that England play, essentially. You know, we saw the game against Holland. He's definitely the most comfortable goalkeeper, English goalkeeper, doing that. I mean, he's not at the levels of someone like Edison. I said before we recorded this that, you know, Edison's got a pass completion rate of 85% this season.
Wow. Which is that the highest?
It is of any regular keeper, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, most outfield players would be pleased with that. I mean, I had a look back, we've got data going back a long way, I had a look at the treble winning team, United, in 1998-99. Edison's pass completion this season is higher than Beckham's was and Scholes' was that season.
Shut up.
Yeah.
I think what makes it more impressive as well, you know, I think if you look back at somebody like Lloris, who plays a lot of short balls, I think in the past he's maybe had a high percentage, but he plays a lot of short balls, where the variation in Edison's passing means it's even more impressive because he does do it over long distances, not just easy short ones.
Yeah. I mean, it's totally... I mean, historically, the average pass completion rate for a keeper, which, you know, until Guardiola came here, it wasn't ever deemed... You know, we collected pass data on goalkeepers for years, and no one ever wanted it. It was just kind of, it's like storing beans in case there's a nuclear war. It was just there in the cupboard. But and then Guardiola sort of bought Bravo, and everyone suddenly was like, "We need, you know, the numbers," and suddenly it became a thing.
Do you have pass completion rate for the other keepers, just to give us an idea? Or
yeah, so like De Gea, who I would say De Gea sort of plays like a traditional good goal, you know, he doesn't always try and play it out like Edison would. His pass completion rate is 58%, which is what used to be kind of standard for a goalkeeper. You know, at the other end, Joe Hart, 44%. I think the bottom is Alex McCarthy. Interestingly, bottom of any keeper that's made a lot of games is Pope with 39%. Yeah. So,
really?
But I mean, that's a lot to do with the style of play that they play more direct.
Yeah.
Same with West Ham as well, if they're playing Andy Carroll. Or,
yeah.
And to a certain extent, even with United, because I mean, United, like, past couple of seasons, relied on like Zlatan, Fellaini, and Lukaku as well. So
target men.
Yeah, and I don't think it's probably not a great reflection on David De Gea. I don't think, because I think he is capable of, if he's asked to do it. He could be able to do it.
No, more than any other kind of data point, goalkeeper pass completion is absolutely a result of what the manager tells a player to do.
Yeah, of course, absolutely.
And, you know, but what's interesting is that Pope and De Gea are up there in one respect, but Pope is very different.
After this, and I'm more than happy to pay for it, could you get me the pass completion, and for a friend of mine, James McEwen, who plays in goal, for the Slade months at Grimsby, if that's okay, because that was very much a just lump it up as far as you can, just to see what happens.
Wish I could. We don't actually analyse League One and League Two to that level.
Joking.
As a Wickham fan, I would similarly be interested in, I would expect similar sort of numbers, to be honest. But we do the Championship, and let's just say Cardiff have been agricultural.
Agricultural.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We talked about who's going to the World Cup. You've said Pickford. Who else are you sticking on there? Pope. Sorry, Pope. You've said Pope as well.
Yeah, Pope. And then, I mean, looking at, you'd probably go for, hang on, where's my numbers gone? I mean, up there, Tom Heaton, but you're not going to take Pope and Heaton, obviously. But I mean,
so is Heaton still?
Heaton's done all right. I mean, obviously he hasn't played that much this season. But I think the big thing, very different to 8 years ago when it was all about take Joe Hart and then play. You know, he should have played Joe Hart in 2010 instead of Green and James. Yeah. But now it's the complete reverse in that he might go and he hasn't really earned it at all. So. I mean, there's the kind of spurious notion of experience, but, you know, he's only ever played in 2 World Cups. And if you remember, he only played 2 matches in the last one.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and the bad experience as well. That's a thing.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, and I've said this before about, you know, what people have said that about taking for experiences, but the other two keepers, if he does go, the other two keepers sitting there looking at him and thinking, you know, all he's doing is reminding them of his bad performance in World Cups, you know, what's happened in the last Euros and World Cups as well, like, you know, so it's yeah. It's just putting sort of, you know, bad experience in their brain as well.
And also as well, like, the, as you say, from looking at the Holland team, and can, you know, Gareth Southgate has come out and said he wants to play very much in the same vein as Pep Guardiola from the back and, you know, less agricultural. And I think the team selection that he chooses, you know, reflects that. You know, we haven't really got the players like Lampard and Gerrard anymore. Where it's got, oh, you've got to use them for experience. Mm. You know, apart from maybe Milner and I think it's, you know, Lallana and Henderson, you haven't really got the old guard that we used to have. So I think that selecting goalkeepers, you kind of go with that same theme as well. We're going, well, why can't I have Pope? I mean, he's had an incredible season. He's been thrown, you know, to talk about being thrown amongst it, where there are some goalkeepers, when they're thrown in the Premier League, don't necessarily survive. There's, you know, a few goalkeepers that we talked about off air where, you know, they've had to come in and haven't done a great job, whereas Pope has come in and he's thrived under the pressure. He's thrived under the pressure. You kind of think, well, maybe he should definitely be going. And, you know,
Well, all three of them have that. I think that's the difference in their mentalities. The both of them have reacted well under pressure.
Yeah.
And they, like I said, in the case of likes of Pickford and certainly Pope, they welcome it as well.
Yeah. What else have you got for us in the way of stats?
We've talked about good goalkeeping. I guess if we look at the flip side of that and errors, I think probably the other main trend come out in the Premier League this season has been the sort of decline of Hugo Lloris, whether that's temporary or permanent.
Right.
He's made 5. We basically have a kind of semi-subjective thing called error leading to a goal or to an attempt. And that basically where we deem, you know, it can be a defender or anyone really, but someone's made a mistake that's directly led to a goal or a shot. And Lloris has made 5, which I think is as many as he's made in the previous seasons combined.
Really?
And he's actually made, if you combine shots as well, he's made 8 errors leading to shots and goals, which is more than any other goalkeeper.
Sorry, so he's made 8 errors.
He's made 8 errors, 5 of which have led directly to goals.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which is obviously something that's going to be quite high profile. You know, when a goalkeeper makes that sort of mistake, it is high profile. But it's something that he hasn't done before, really.
I think I said about last week, did a piece on him for the IP. And I think it is just this season. I think especially when you know yourself about collecting data, when it's just down to one season, you know, then you can pass it off as just a loss of form or... rather than just a sign of decline.
Yeah.
Because he has been so good previously.
Yeah, I mean, the only keeper to make more errors leading directly to a goal this season is Petr Cech, who I think is the other way, which I think is down to a sort of, you know, perfectly natural kind of age-related decline, probably.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And that's probably a big decision, I guess, for the Arsenal manager to come in, whether they keep Cech as the first choice, whether he becomes a sort of experienced number two or what, really.
So. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? I absolutely love Petr Cech as a goalkeeper.
I mean, historically, I would say without a shadow of a doubt, he's the best goalkeeper in the Premier League era by a mile.
If you take his
career, yeah, he's kept over 200 clean sheets. His first season, he kept 24 clean sheets in his first season at Chelsea.
Wow!
He didn't even play every
league,
game.
League. Wow.
And so, he was a kid as well. He was only 22, 23 as well when he came in, I think.
Yeah. He's basically lived his entire career in the Premier League. And, you know, that first sort of 5-6 seasons at Chelsea, I mean, even then winning the Champions League, you know, famously the last couple of years at Arsenal, he went 15 penalties without saving one. But obviously, the Champions League final made crucial saves. It's obviously a legend at Chelsea. I think, you know, without any doubt, he has been the best goalkeeper.
That's fascinating. And I think it is, you know, it's a decision for the new Arsenal manager, whoever that may be. You know, he's got two goalkeepers there that are on the older scale of things, aren't they? And it probably needs a bit of an overhaul.
Yeah, well, I said before, Ospina will be looking for more regular games next season, so I think he'll be leaving. So I think that you're right, there's probably going to be a second choice next year. I think Cech, they bring somebody else in like they're sporting about.
Well, Ospina, it's interesting though, isn't it? Because, I mean, him and Cech both, I mean this in the nicest possible way, both look like dads, do you know what I mean? And they probably are, but, you know, Ospina, he looks a lot older than he is. He's 29 years old. But where do you go? I mean, he had 6 years at Nice, we were there. Obviously, first team, and then he's been here in England.
Oh no, he's got the World Cup with Colombia as well. Like, you know, so he's, you know, there's no doubt about his pedigree.
The funny thing with goalkeepers in the Premier League now is that obviously it's a very different position in the sense that you can only have one in a team. So assuming your first choice goalkeeper doesn't get injured, you know, most clubs are going to want to have a pretty good replacement, but they might not get to play. And it's whether you can get one that's happy to basically maybe go through a season and just play in the League Cup or just play the odd game in Europe.
Well, this is what we chat about, and it came up the other day, the fact that Ospina had just been resigned to cup games. And then he had the cup final.
The semi-final against Atletico Madrid, yeah. So, and I think that Petr Cech was on the bench for the game in between.
It was the other week, but I can't remember exactly what game it was, but he was on the bench, and obviously
it happened with Romero last season as well, because they promised them these games in the cups, the managers stick with them. Like I said, we spoke about before about the cup final, whether they'll stick with Caballero and Romero like they have done all the way through the cup games, or whether they'll go with Courtois and De Gea. Both managers need to win this.
Yeah.
You know, so it'd be a big decision for them to leave them out. But if they're playing in this cup semi-finals like Ospina was, they have to play in the league games in between and around them to give them that practice, give them that gameplay.
Yeah. And that's the decision, you know, that's the almost like the quandary for a manager now. How do you play it? Or do you just hope that you've got one incredibly fit goalkeeper that can play 46 games, 50 games in a season.
Yeah, I mean, people shouldn't think it's necessarily a newfangled modern thing, rotating goalkeepers, because Preston, in the first proper season, 1888-89, actually had a league goalie and a cup goalie. So,
really?
Did they?
Yeah.
That is interesting.
So a different guy played all the FA Cup games. So.
Wow!
I hope there was some granddad in the Preston crowd complaining that modern football was killing the game.
The modern game shit.
Yeah.
By the way, it's not Johnny Jackson. I love that. That's why he's great.
That's why he's in.
That's. Come on, where was there some more? Don't leave.
Okay, here's some more. You want some?
That's the way you went, quote. You had a smile. Went, oh, no, it's been serious. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, you actually want some. Fair enough. Okay, here's a few of my kind of favourite ones. I think my all-time favourite Premier League goalkeeping stat is Jens Lehmann, who we all miss.
Yes.
A lot. Obviously, a key man in the Invincible season, but he actually, in 2006-07, 8 yellow cards, which is a total that Lee Catamar would be impressed with.
Yeah.
But I think 3 or 4 of them were for time waste. It was a brilliant kind of one against Arsenal at home to Wigan, where he was clearly wasting time, and he kind of was doing the kind of tripping over, and the ball was ricocheting off the advertising hoardings, and the ref was just, you know, just had enough, booked him, and Lehmann still managed to look aggrieved that, you know, it had happened.
When I was in Iceland, I went over there for a couple of months ending my career, and I had 10 games there, and I was booked 4 times in the first 4 games, and I was facing, obviously, if you get 5 bookings, you get a 1 match ban. I was facing a ban after just four games.
Why were you getting yellow cards?
Well, it was because I was shouting at the referee. Three of them were because I was shouting at the referee. One was because I came and booted somebody outside the box, which was fair enough. You know what I mean? Yeah. I was lucky to get just a yellow for that one. And it was all through frustration because I wasn't very good, that's why. I mean, I got that wrong. I was very good, but I just didn't feel great.
Oh, right,
I didn't,
okay.
You know, because I felt, I was about 37, something like that? 37? Yeah, 37. Yeah, and I could feel that I was getting old. So I took the most frustrations out on the referees.
Were the Icelandic referees nice, or?
They were quite strict with me, to be honest with you. Whether they could understand what I was saying or not.
I'm sure there's a stat in there that like 1 in 5 people in Iceland are a referee.
Yeah, definitely.
Because of the population being 19 people.
Yeah, I got pretty fed up of Icelandic population-based numbers in the Euro 2016. It was every day, wasn't it?
It must have been like a competition to come out with the town that was the equivalent population in England,
yeah.
Like not.
A bit like Yorkshire at the Olympics, which is the worst thing ever.
Yeah, it's like, West Ham have won the World Cup, Yorkshire have won the Olympics, and everyone in Iceland plays for the Icelandic football team. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
So you said he had 6 yellow cards in the
8 yellow cards.
8 yellow cards. What is the average for a goalkeeper? Do you have
probably about 1.2 or something a season?
Per season?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, lots of them will go through a season without getting booked.
Yeah.
In terms of red cards, most red cards from keeper in the Premier League era is 4 by Pavel Cernicek. Long trousers and Juicy Jaskalainen.
The late Pavel Cernicek.
Yeah, bless him, yeah.
That was sad.
So was it 4 yellow cards, and Juicy Jaskalainen has...
They both got 4 reds in their Premier League career. First keepers to be sent off in Premier League, first British keeper sent off, Simon Tracy.
Oh, Tracy, yeah. Simon Tracy. Sheffield United?
Sheffield United, yeah. And first overseas keeper, one of the only overseas keepers, I think, early doors in the Premier League, was Craig Forrest.
Ipswich, yeah.
Canadian custodian, as he was probably never known.
It's quite funny, the first non-British goalkeeper, Craig Forrest, goes, that just sounds like the most British name in the world, doesn't it? But you just forget there's other countries that have the same languages.
Yeah, they've stolen our names. Yeah, last team approaching the World Cup, so let's have a look at that. The last country to use all 3 of their goalkeepers in a World Cup.
Oh, this was a good one.
Right, so last team to use all 3 goalkeepers in the World Cup. Oh, that is interesting. I'm going to say, that was Euros, wasn't it? I was going to say Holland.
Holland did do some keeper shenanigans in the last World Cup, obviously bringing on Tim Krul.
Tim Krul, for penalties. But, crikey. This is great. It's like our own little pub quiz.
I'm going to go with Argentina. No?
No.
I'm going to go with...
I'll give you the World Cup. It was 1994.
Right, so I'm going to go with... Ireland?
No,
it wasn't, was it?
It was Greece.
Greece.
Who only played three games. They basically used a different keeper in each game. That is the most...
Do you know why?
They are the birthplace of democracy, and maybe that is
yeah, just to make it fair.
Democratic, yeah. You know what? They had a vote
amongst the goalkeepers to see who should play. Yeah. They all voted for themselves, yeah.
And obviously, actually, thinking about it, one of those games would have been against Argentina when Maradona did the running at the camera.
The mad eyes.
The little kiss.
Did
the kiss as well?
Do
you know why they use three different
goalkeepers? I don't actually.
He's a great stat.
Maybe
it's just because, you know, like at parties when they smash plates, after each game they smash the goalkeeper.
I'm going to have to search that. That's amazing. As to why they did that.
Any more World Cup stuff?
What else have you got?
I mean, it's not necessarily a stat, but my big bugbear about World Cups and goalkeepers remains, and it'd be interesting to get David's opinion on this, but remains Peter Shilton in 1990, because the penalty saving, he had an idea that he could wait for the penalty to be taken and then decide, but the human brain doesn't work that fast. And if you actually look at the penalties, he didn't really get close to any of them. So they had Dave Besson on the bench, fairly good at saving penalties. You know, you could argue if England had done a Tim Krul special and brought Besson on for the shootout, we might have won that game.
That is a good point. But to be fair, it's something that's doing a thing next week with about penalties, and it's one thing that I would actually point towards as well. You know, especially in the modern game now, I think top class penalty takers are very rarely, they very rarely have a pattern or. I try and think the phrase they use. It's they react to the goalkeeper's movements. So you have somebody like Eden Hazard, who's sort of he does a very slow approach. His eyes roll on the goalkeeper, and he just waits for them to just flinch one way or the other, and he just
his foot automatically goes right. He's gone left on going right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he switches it at the last minute. So I think there's a lot more keepers. I mean, Christian Benteke does it, and he still misses it. You know, so that's the best way of doing it.
I'm just looking at the three goalkeepers that were used in Greece's World Cup squad.
Pronounce them. I bet you can't pronounce the names.
Absolutely can, mate. Adonis Minou, very easy. Then there was Christos Karkamanis, and then there was Ilias Atmatsidis.
Atmatsidis, did he have a Twitter handle in 1994 ahead of the game?
He's always on. Yeah.
Who's the comedian there?
Well, I don't know, it's not me. As we found out on social media on Saturday mornings. You seem to be like looking at your computers if you've got something else to
do. No, that's just enjoying the font.
Just enjoying the font.
Calibri Body, if anyone's interested.
For anybody that wants to buy your book, Duncan, where is the best place to buy it from?
In either a bookshop. Are they still around?
Yeah, they are.
Or one of your favourite, online emporiums?
It is Outside the Box. It is a statistical journey through the history of football. It is by Duncan Alexander, who's been with us.
Do you get more money if it's bought in a bookshop?
I don't know, actually.
It's a good question.
Yeah. Oh, that is the voice of someone who's absolutely minted, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's not bothered at all.
Not bothered. With his tan.
Like Liam Ridgewell just burning £20 notes.
Oh, really? Well, listen, Duncan, thank you very much for coming on. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Follow Duncan on Twitter at Oily Sailor. Follow OptiJoe, which is at OptiJoe. And also, more importantly, follow Ilias at Mazidis, the third Greek goalkeeper used in the 1994 World Cup. Thank you very much for listening. It is goodbye from me, Lloyd.
Goodbye from me, David.
And
goodbye from me, Duncan.
Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.